You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode number 138 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Carcino,
and we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks. I was going to say 2018 playoff bound Seattle Seahawks, but it doesn't quite have the same ring to it.
I kind of like that. We should say that until they're out.
All right. We'll start that trend from now on.
Well, we'll say it for wherever they're at, because they're only playoff bound for this week. I guess next week also.
I mean, they're just in the playoffs at that point.
Yeah. So if you haven't done so already, we had a few special episodes over the last couple of weeks. Drop everything you're doing.
As always. We've recorded a lot of podcasts since we last did a weekly Pelton cast.
It's too much content.
Yes.
Go back and listen to, if you haven't listened to it already, our 2018 Year in Music and our 2018 Seattle Sports Year in Review with special guests Natalie Weiner and Mina Kimes. It was a good one.
It was. I guess there was a fourth Pelton brother at that point, since they were both on the podcast.
Four Pelton brothers. The world cannot handle such a thing.
Oh, no. That's too many Pelton brothers.
You were so delighted about my bold prediction of a DVOA bowl between the 49ers and the Rams this year.
I could not wait for the world to hear that.
It's my favorite projection that I made, though. Bold prediction, not projection. It's my favorite prediction because it was so specific, and it would have been amazing if it happened, but it was bold, right?
It was definitely bold. I can't argue with that.
Maybe. It also had nothing to do with Seattle sports. It was just a lone bold prediction.
I mean, tangentially, yes.
Yes. But probably it was basically Russell Wilson will win the MVP or be in the position to win the MVP for at this time in 2019 is a statement of where the Seahawks will be. And that was meant to be a statement of where the Seahawks would be then. And I was wrong on one of those accounts, soon to be right on the other.
Also, in reviewing the audio there is I edited the podcast. I don't believe you can say the word presumptive.
Presumptive?
You kept saying presumptive.
Oh, yeah, that's a word.
Okay, but that's not all there. There's also the very first episode of Trader Bros was recorded last week.
I even forgot about that.
I know. It seems like so long ago, but that was not that long ago, in fact.
So anyway, drop everything you're doing. Stop listening. Go and listen to those podcasts.
I would actually say listen to this podcast.
You
first.
Say that every time.
Because
you
this one is more time sensitive.
Drop everything they're doing.
Very rarely, in fact, do I want people to drop
most
everything
of the time,
they're doing.
Dropping everything no, they're doing. But we've recorded way too much content. We needed to get one last episode out. There's not going to be any sort of fun talk. There's not going to be any sort of ramen bracket. There'll be none of the Husky basketball stuff that you're all clamoring for. This is just raw football. and really previewing the games that will be happening this weekend and early next week, which have huge implications for the Seahawks and also are maybe the most important game that the Huskies have played since at least the day after Thanksgiving.
Wow, that's a really long. What about the Pac-12 championship?
The Apple Cup was more important.
I was going to say it was the most important since they were in the college football playoff.
Winning the Apple Cup was one of your top 10 sports stories of the year. Winning the Pac-12 championship was not.
Yeah, it was. Going to the Rose Bowl and winning the Pac-12 championship was.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, no.
Anyway.
Dispute that logic.
We have a couple of toasts to get to, though, before then.
We do. Well, this is also on the football topic because last weekend was the final weekend, the championship round of the Peltoncast Fantasy Football Leagues. And while I am, claiming credit for winning my league because of the fact that I had the highest score of anyone last weekend after my team completely no-showed in week 15
that's
in the
not
first
how
round
works.
Of the playoffs. No, that's how I'm making it work. Alas, that league was won by Jimmer, who knocked out Natalie Weiner in the final despite playing Todd Gurley.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then in the other league, the famous Cousin Katie, she had to be stopped at all costs, and she was, in fact, stopped by the Patton.
Well, congrats to both of them. It was a fun year in fantasy football. I fared much better. I didn't make the playoffs in the Peloton Cast League. My team was definitely better. I was in it until the end. And you and I have 1 week left in our showdown in our other league, which goes all the way through week 17.
We run the world's only 17-week fantasy league. And we're seeing why no one else does that this week.
Are we?
I guess actually there's a high number of players.
My team is not going to look all that different than it looked most of the season.
Yeah. I guess that's true.
But again, next year, we would be excited for people to join us. What we're doing, you have been desperate to have relegation in a fantasy football league for a very long time. Since you heard of fantasy football, you have wanted relegation.
No, I mean, when we played like a four-person league where we were keeping score by hand in the late
baseball.
1990s. No, we did a year of football, too.
I don't think I participated in that.
I don't know if we even got through the whole year, but... then I did not.
You wanted relegation. You wanted two-team leagues. you've wanted relegation for a long time.
Since I started following the EPL. Let's go with that.
And you've finally been able to achieve it with the Peloton Cast Fantasy
League. Well, hypothetically.
Leagues.
Enough people have to come back next year. So hopefully you had a fun time in the Fantasy League.
I mean, we could get to three leagues also if more people are interested.
That would be great.
Which would be pretty fun to have basically ABC. And in the Peloton Cast A League next year is you, me, and the famous Cousin Katie.
Three words. Bring it on.
Man. I also like that in the B League, Ben Baldwin will be in that league. So I wanna basically bill that as play against the worst takes on the internet. The worst fry takes on the internet.
The worst potato takes, because that also Mexi fries, tater tots. Ben is wrong about all of those fries. All those potato variants. Yeah. And I haven't had a loaded potato skin in a while, but maybe that. Baked potatoes, mashed potatoes.
Well, congrats to those competitors. We're very impressed with what they were able to achieve throughout the season. They worked hard. They maintained their focus. They were the team that nobody wanted to see going into the playoffs. They showed a lot of grit. And they achieved the ultimate goal of winning the Peloton Cast Fantasy League.
No higher tribute, no higher honor. The other toast this week to the new T-Mobile Park, now the official new name of the former Safeco Field after that sponsorship deal was announced last week. That's the only baseball we are talking this week for sure.
Thank God.
Since we're not doing Husky basketball, we're going to skip right ahead and start talking about the Seahawks this weekend against the Arizona Cardinals. The other podcast we recorded, I don't know if you want to go back and listen to this necessarily. It's not his time.
Oh, wow, we did that one too. Drop everything.
Sunday Night Football, Seahawks 38-31, thrilling win over the Kansas City Chiefs. We recapped that game.
So now we preview what is a very important game to pick up a win against the Arizona Cardinals, a team coming in with the worst record in the league right now. They're competing for something here, too.
The number one pick in the draft?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've been helped out. Oakland with a win last weekend. San Francisco beating the Seahawks 2 weeks ago. A number of their winning back-to-back weeks, even, against Denver the previous week. A number of other teams have taken themselves out of the running for the number one pick and made the Cardinals the favorite here. But here's the problem for the Cardinals, is that they always seem to win in Seattle, always at the end of the season.
It's a reason to be scared. I mean, look, we've all seen this so many times. There's no way we would let our guard down about this game. But at the same time, this is not the same Cardinals team coming in here. We've talked about this before.
Bruce Arians in his Kangol hat, not walking through the door.
Wait, how are you on my side now?
Carson Palmer.
Do I have to point out that we don't know who's on the broadcast booth?
Yeah. No, it's not a CBS game, so I think we know. Carson Palmer. Drew Stanton not walking through that door.
Drew Stanton.
He definitely beat the Seahawks in Seattle.
Oh, man.
He ruined Christmas a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, he's the Grinch.
He certainly is.
Okay, so I wanted to take a look back at those games because what we remember is games that we expected the Seahawks to win and they ultimately lost at basically the end of the year for most of them.
Yes.
Against the Cardinals at home.
Yes.
And Russell Wilson is 2-4 against the Cardinals at home.
It's bizarre. He's 5-0-1 against the Cardinals in Arizona. Or five, he has not lost in the Arians era. Arizona. He did lose his first game in the NFL was at Arizona.
Wait, so he's 5-1-1 against the Cardinals. And a lot of those, I mean, there was a game at the end of the year in 2000. And
the DVOA Bowl?
That was a DVOA Bowl.
The Week 17 game?
I don't think there was a Week 17. There was a game that was like a Thursday night or something that the Seahawks crushed the Cardinals. Maybe it was a Sunday night. They beat them like 36-6 where Marshawn dove backwards into the end zone with his hand out.
Oh, yeah, that is a different game. But there was also the Week 17 DVOA Bowl where the Cardinals had already clinched, but they played their starters in the first half and were getting destroyed by the Seahawks in that game.
I didn't realize that was a DVOA Bowl.
That was 2015, I believe.
Well, so 2015, that was an excellent Cardinals team. But yes. So, okay, you look back, 2017, remember this horrible loss, right? Devastating loss. Basically, the last straw in what was a frustrating season for the Seahawks. The Cardinals were 8-8, 22nd in DVOA. The year before that, when Drew Stanton ruined Christmas, they were 7-8-1 because, of course, they had that magnificent, was it a 6-6 tie against the Seahawks?
It sure was.
The week before the Seahawks beat the Patriots, they were 16th in DVOA. In 2015, they were 13-3 and third in DVOA, which that was like one of the best games.
Oh, that was Carson Palmer, actually, in 2016.
In 2016 was Carson Palmer?
Yeah.
The 2015 game was one of the best games that we've been to, right? Excellent game. But they were an amazing team, 13-3, third in DVOA. And in 2013, they were 10-6, 10th in DVOA. And I remember being at that game. That was the year that the Seahawks won the Super Bowl. It was week 16, I think. Maybe week 17?
I think it was week 16. I think you're right.
It was pouring rain. It was just an ugly, ugly game.
It was before we realized that Russell Wilson was unable to play in the rain.
And it was just horrible to watch. It was horrible to be at. I hated everything about it. I think I think we drove back from Portland that day, but maybe we didn't. I thought maybe we drove back from Portland that morning. I know you gave me a ride to that game. But they were 10th in DVOA, 10-6 the year in 2013. Like, the fact that we thought this was going to be an easy win shows just how good the Seahawks were. But there was not a bad Cardinals team coming in.
Yes.
This year, the Cardinals have the worst record in the league and the worst DVOA in the league. They are the worst team in the league by any metric you could look at. That is why this is different. This is not the kind of game that we need to worry about in the same sort of way. You always have your guard up, but we don't need to worry about it in the same sort of way that we did for all of these horrible, horrible Russell Wilson losses against Arizona at home.
I suppose. I grudgingly suppose so. The Cardinals have the third worst offensive DVOA on record back to 1986 in the Football Outsiders database coming into Week 17.
The third worst DVOA on record?
Offensive DVOA.
Oh, okay.
And if you look at their DVOA over the last 6 weeks of the season, which was the split that Aaron Schatz did in his weekly DVOA column, their DVOA is more than twice as negative as any other NFL team over that span. That's bad. In this case, you don't want to be negative. And the defense, remarkably, which is pretty good early in the season, including when the Seahawks won in Arizona in a game that was very much a slog in the tradition.
The Seahawks were bad then.
Of many
games. That was before week five when the Seahawks got good.
No. Oh. What a turning point that was. That was before Cable Thanos was making videos, so.
Still Thanos.
Yeah, I know.
We're working on it.
I need speech therapy. Their defense ranks 30th over that span.
Wow.
So even what was the crown jewel, the one remaining Cardinals-like element of this team is now bad.
Steve Wilks is almost certainly going to be fired after this game. After one season being in Arizona, there's just nothing left for them to play for. I mean, honestly, like if there's a reason to suspect that the Cardinals might be trying harder, it's that Steve Wilks doesn't care. He's not going to be there to make this number one overall pick next year. The front office probably is not going to be there to make this overall number one pick next year. It's probably going to be a whole new regime.
You know what I always like is when like coaches know they're going to get fired and then they start like going for it on fourth down a whole bunch and calling trick plays.
We don't want that to happen.
Why weren't you doing that all along? This is actually the right thing to do. This is not the thing you do after you get fired. It's the thing you do to keep you get for getting fired. But the problem that
it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy in the same way with the play action stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
The problem that Steve Wilks has is that Josh Rosen is submitting one of the worst quarterback seasons on record. which is weird because we
it sounds like Steve Wilkes has a lot of problems.
He has many problems. We saw Josh Rosen in, I believe, his first start after he'd come in relief of Sam Bradford and led a comeback against the Detroit Lions
yes.
the previous week. And we saw his single best start of the season by far.
I mean, after that game, I described him as not bad.
He had an 80.4 QBR in that game. His best game since then, in terms of QBR, was a 51.7 against the Rams last Sunday. And he's had several in there in the single digits in between. His overall 27.7 QBR is the lowest by a qualifying quarterback with at least 320 pass attempts, sacks, or QB runs since Matt Cassel in 2012. He is completing 55% of his passes, which is better only than fellow rookie Josh Allen. Yes, is one
Josh. Josh.
His 5.9 yards per attempt are last among qualifying quarterbacks so far this season. Only Ryan Fitzpatrick among qualifying quarterbacks has a higher interception rate, but he has been decent on his limited scrambles.
Oh, there we go.
The last couple of weeks, Mike Glennon, who started the season, is the number three quarterback for the Cardinals, has come in relief and gone 15 of 21 for 174.
Wow, that contract the Bears gave Mike Glennon. Yeah. He's the number three quarterback on the worst team in the league.
Now he's the number two quarterback.
But he was the number three quarterback on the worst team in the league behind a quarterback who's having the third worst quarterback season of all time.
That was offensive DVOA. And, of course, all time is relative here. The other thing that's happened this season.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Is that David Johnson has just never really been able to do anything all season, which is a dramatic change for someone who was one of the NFL's best running backs when he was last healthy in the 2016 season after being injured in the 2017 season opener. He's near the bottom of the league in rushing DVOA and barely better than replacement level as a receiver, which is where he really stood out back in 2016. There was initial hope of a bounce back under new offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich, who replaced Mike McCoy after week seven. And that never really materialized. It didn't continue. He has 47 catches for 440 yards going into the season finale. In 2016, he had 80 catches for 879 yards. So double his current total.
I mean, part of that is, first off, running backs don't matter.
Accurate.
David Johnson could be any player. But also, he's in an offense that's playing badly. I mean, probably the amount of snaps that they've run is quite a few worse than they did in the past.
Yes. I mean, he's performed, yeah, I mean,
they're not bad because David Johnson is bad.
No,
they're bad because Mike Glennon is bad and because Josh Rosen is bad.
No, Mike Glennon has actually been good.
I'm scared.
I would say that David Johnson is a symptom, not the cause, of just the fact that this team does, besides not having the quarterback play necessary to execute it,
Mike Glennon is beating the Seahawks.
A competent game plan offensively. He probably is.
Oh, God.
Just prepare yourself for it. It's better that way.
You talked me into the Seahawks losing this game.
Here's the good news, though. Can I tell you the good news? So the Cardinals defense, it's still number 18 overall in DVOA despite that terrible last 6 weeks. But do you know what the Cardinals are bad at?
What is that?
It's run defense.
Oh, no.
No, oh, yes.
Just oh, no for shoddy.
They're allowing 4.9 yards per carry to opposing running backs, which is the fourth worst in the NFL. And over the last 2 weeks, have allowed 484 rushing yards, including a 20 for 167 performance for generational talent, C.J. Anderson, for MVP favorite, C.J. Anderson, in relief of Todd Gurley last week, in an 11 carry for 145-yard day for Tevin Coleman, which is other Tevin Coleman fantasy owners like me, who has him in two leagues, can tell you, is very atypical for Tevin Coleman's second half of the season.
Typical for C.J., though.
Yes.
What do you think about Rashad Penny basically being the starting running back in this game, if he's healthy?
I mean, I think you can shift a lot of the workload his direction here. I mean, Chris Carson's already gotten to 1,000 yards. He's achieved that milestone. And obviously, you're looking ahead to the playoffs. But I just don't think you should enter this game thinking about, oh, hey, can the Seahawks rest defensive starters or, you know, rest Chris Carson or whoever it is. You have to start out because of the importance. We've talked about this in the Sunday Night Football recap pod. Because of the crucial importance difference between finishing fifth and sixth in the wild card standings. You have to win this game. So you can't do anything until a victory in this game has been secured or is at least well in hand.
I think I say that not as much about saying that they should be resting starters and more about the drop off, we know that the drop off between Chris Carson and say Rashad Penny or Mike Davis is not that great. And so you have Rashad Penny coming back from injury, says that he's feeling healthy. Why not give him a lot of carries here?
It's a good opportunity to get him some work, certainly. But that same rationale is also why it's not as big of a deal if something were to happen there.
But I think more so, what were you going to say?
Well, just like an opportunity to have him look good against this terrible run defense.
Well, I think more just like, let's talk about the injuries for a second here, because I think this game is not going to be about, and we talked about this on the recap pod, it's not going to be about resting your starters, which, however, a huge lead in Russ not playing in the second half would be great.
I agreed. That's not usually how these games go.
It's more about if players are 50-50 or something, they don't need to play.
True.
That's what winning that Chiefs game was about last week, and that's why it was so huge, you know, that they went for it. But if Doug Baldwin isn't feeling even close to 100% or good enough, he's probably not going to play in this one.
Yeah, he's suddenly on the injury report with a shoulder injury, which we did not know about previously. Among the myriad number of injuries Doug Baldwin has played through this season, DJ Fluker and G.R. Sweezy both considered day-to-day. According to Pete Carroll, they have not practiced yet this week. Besides Penny, Jermaine Ifedi was also a full participant in practice on Wednesday, and Tedrick Thompson was able to return at that point in a limited fashion after the chest issue that kept him out of last Sunday's game cleared. So Seahawks still mostly healthy.
Pretty strange thing for Tedrick.
It's not something I understand. I'm not a doctor.
Did we notice any drop-off?
Not sure we did.
I mean, whatever. Like, sure, hope Tedrick plays, but like the Delano Hill, Bradley McDougald secondary.
Delano.
Still Delano.
Yeah, will you tap me?
Thanos Hill. It was a great secondary against a very good Chiefs pass game.
Yeah. And this is not a very good Cardinals pass game. I did want to mention something quickly on their pass defense, which is number 11 ranked overall. That's largely because of the fact that, you know, Football Outsiders splits it out by side of the field. The Cardinals are third in DVOA on passes to the right side, which is where Patrick Peterson generally is. They are number 31 in DVOA against passes over the middle.
Somebody needs to free Patrick Peterson from the Cardinals. This Cardinals team is not going to be good for a long time.
I think it could happen this year. They are also sixth in adjusted sack rate, led by Chandler Jones's 12 sacks. Chances of victory for this game? Any other thoughts before we get to that?
I think chances of victory are like 90%.
I'm going to go 85%. Just a little bit of conservative. Because it's not just the Cardinals. It's also games against when the Rams were really bad at the end of the season at home. Like, I think back to everyone remarked on the similarity of Week 16, the Seahawks on Sunday Night Football beat on Festivus, beating the Chiefs much like they did in more dominant fashion, the 49ers back in 2012 at the beginning of the Russell Wilson era when they were really just coming into their own as contenders. And then the next week, it was a slog against the Rams in a game where
they still needed to win that game.
They had a chance had San Francisco lost, presumably to the Cardinals, to win the division. The 49ers rather ended up winning that game, so it was ultimately meaningless. But it was still the game they were trying to win.
Every game against the Rams was ugly for like a 6-year period. Basically, every game against Jeff Fisher was ugly.
Every game against the NFC West was ugly. But
Jeff Fisher's gone now, and the games aren't as ugly.
It's true.
Except for last year.
I mean, the other factor is have we checked out the weather report for Sunday?
I'm pretty sure it's going to rain.
I mean, it's late December in Seattle.
It's going to rain, and it's going to be gloomy.
We lucked out not having any rain last Sunday against the Chiefs, and there was like a 4-hour window that night where it didn't rain, and the game happened to be played.
I told you
that
Russ was touched by an angel.
Actually, the
forecast, there were higher powers at work for the weather on Sunday.
The forecast is looking pretty favorable for
Sunday.
There
we go.
A 20% probability of rain, according to
Weather
Underground.
This is going to be like the 2012 Cardinal game all over again.
There you go. That would be something. Yeah. Well, hopefully the Seahawks take care of business and secure the fifth seed.
And we are previewing here a game against the Dallas Cowboys next week, because the difference between...
It's 20% in DVOA, the difference between them and Chicago.
I mean, just spots-wise, point differential-wise, like, the Seahawks are just a better team than the Cowboys.
Ability to play in a dome-wise?
I mean, when you look at the options where it's the Bears as the 6th overall team at DVOA, slightly better than the Seahawks, and the Cowboys at 22.
Also, a team you've already beaten this season, granted, before they made the trade for Amari Cooper. And
we did adjust it to more recent, like...
Yes.
And they're only 20th there.
No, they haven't actually played that well in all these games.
They beat the Saints in one good game.
I mean, they won a number of games where they weren't necessarily against relatively weak competition.
I mean, that game against the Eagles, looking back on it, now that the Eagles look pretty good, you're like, that was a kind of a nice win. But then they were shut out by the Indianapolis Colts, who the previous week were shut out by the Jacksonville Jaguars.
So by transitive property, I don't know what the actual conclusion is there. The Jaguars are 16 points better than the Cowboys, who they actually lost to, I believe, earlier in the season.
It is just such a large difference.
That's why you got to take care of business. Or count on the Chicago Bears to do your work for you, because they do have incentive to win their game against Minnesota.
So if the Bears win, it doesn't matter what the Seahawks do.
That is correct.
And they're both at 125 or whatever.
That is also
interesting.
Correct. So the Bears still have the outside chance of moving up to the number two spot.
The Rams could lose that game against the 49ers.
They could. It's losable. Should we get to the granddaddy of them all?
Oh, man.
For the first time in Pelton Cast history, previewing the Rose Bowl. That's exciting. I'm excited about that.
How did we not get a logo with roses? A Pelton Cast logo with roses? Where's the famous Cousin Katie?
And there's still time.
Okay.
We can still do that. So we gave our first thoughts on this matchup with Ohio State after it was officially announced, after Ohio State missed out on the college football playoff and a spot in the top four. Anything that jumps out that has changed in your take about this matchup between now and then?
You know, the most interesting thing that's changed about this matchup is that nothing for Ohio State has really changed, aside from the Urban Meyer announcement that this will almost certainly be his last game at Ohio State. Nothing roster-wise has changed for them, which is not true for teams who are even competing in the college football playoff games. You have stars from Georgia sitting out. You have stars from Alabama being suspended. You have stars from Clemson being suspended. Ohio State's roster, as of this moment, looks exactly the same as it did during the Big Ten championship.
That's true. The other thing that has changed, the one thing that has changed, the line has gone up. It opened at Ohio State minus 5, maybe 5.5 some places. It is now ballooned to Ohio State minus 6.5.
I mean, we knew that was happening.
Did we?
Yeah. Who's going to bet on the Huskies?
I mean, depending on your metric of choice, it's either reasonable or too high to be reasonable. Like, if you go by Football Power Index on ESPN, it's about a 4-point gap between these two teams.
Okay.
The sportsreference.com simple rating system has it about 6 points, so more in the ballpark.
But also, I mean, you have to factor in what, especially betting lines moving, is judging, and it's about who's the larger school, who has the better perception about them. Like, the Huskies are a team who have, what was the quote that Jake had about himself?
Fans are sick of me?
But what was he had a name for it.
It's something with Jake in it.
It could apply to any Husky quarterback.
It's true.
The Jake Lash.
Jake Lash. Okay.
So there's a Jake Lash against the Huskies' four-year starter quarterback. And Ohio State has, who is now with Justin Herbert returning to college, most likely to be the first quarterback taken in this April's draft.
Yes. Assuming he declares.
Who knows? I mean, honestly, if Justin Herbert's coming back, anything can happen, right? If he's willing to give up 15 to 20 draft slots, that's the climate around this. They're Ohio State.
I mean,
they're,
I think the other part of it,
Ohio State University,
but it's also
the Washington Huskies.
It's also how they finished this season. Because if you would have asked people to talk about between Ohio State and UW, I mean, I guess going into rivalry weekend, both of these teams didn't look as good at that point.
I mean, yes, the tables have turned for the Huskies very quickly.
UW hadn't beaten Wazoo at that point and, you know, seemed like a slight underdog going into the Apple Cup. But the way that Ohio State destroyed Michigan, it was far and away their best performance this season, and I think convinced people that this was the Ohio State team that we thought they were at the start of the year, that was considered a favorite to make the playoff.
Yes.
And that nothing that happened in the preceding weeks mattered, but probably what happened in the preceding weeks did matter.
Well, I mean, the way that you would judge, that fans judge a team, is they judge their best performance as their quality, right? But the way that stats judge a team is they look at the entire season, and that's how you get closer to the 4.5 point line. But it's people who are actually paying money on this who are pushing it to 6.5 points.
And it's interesting because even that 4-point difference in FPI is largely because of the fact that that Ohio State came into the season with a higher preseason rating. In terms of performance, this season is measured by the FPI efficiency. These two teams are both pretty similar. So
that's interesting.
Again, it depends how you measure that and about and how you factor in schedule strength and that sort of thing. But it's also an interesting contrast between the way these two teams
have played. Yeah, tell us about Ohio State. Let's get into it.
Yeah. So the marquee matchup is going to be when Ohio State has the ball. They are ranked number 6 in FPI efficiency on offense. The Huskies' defense, of course, not quite as ranked as highly by FPI as measures that strictly go based on points allowed per game, but number 15 there. The place where UW has the advantage is that their offense ranks 18th in FPI efficiency, and the Ohio State defense ranks 42nd. So the Huskies, again, obviously very good in terms of points allowed, better even than, you know, if you look at yards per play and measures like that. UW only once this season allowed 30 points, that coming in overtime against Oregon. Ohio State allowed 31 points to Oregon State, 49 points to Purdue in the one game they lost.
And Oregon State's, or their offense was actually not bad. It was their defense. It was not bad. And they gave up like 70 points in that game, right?
They did.
Yeah.
31 points to Nebraska. 51 points in an overtime 52-51 win over Maryland.
How many overtimes were in there?
I'm not sure. Probably enough for them to have to go for two.
They would have been well over 30.
It was still a lot of points. And then 39 points, even in their most dominant performance of the season against Michigan.
Points in that game?
And they scored 62. they had a pretty good offensive game. This team can cook when they get going offensively.
They sound like a Big 12 team.
I know, they really are. They're miscast in the Big Ten, where Jim Harbaugh is trying to go with a fullback on every play. So, obviously, the guy who makes this all go is, as you mentioned, Dwayne Haskins, who finished third in Heisman Trophy voting. And that seems about right when you look at his advanced stats. He was fourth in QBR this season, had completed better than 70% of his attempts, which ranked 5th among FBS quarterbacks, for 9.2 yards per attempt, which ranked 8th. One interesting thing, especially in the context of the Urban Meyer offense and the players he's historically had at quarterback, he's not really a rushing threat at all, has a slightly negative rushing EPA on the year, according to the QBR model. So the backup quarterback at Ohio State, who is more of a dual threat QB, is one-time UW commit at age 14,
wow.
Tate Martell. Who ended up committing to like 7 or 8 schools, I think, along the way before ending up at Ohio State. And they occasionally use him kind of like a young Tim Tebow, is basically a wildcat where he's going to run, but you have the threat of throwing. But he hasn't actually thrown it at all.
Never thrown a pass.
No, he's thrown passes, but only when, as far as I can tell, in games where he's played
in
quarterback.
Garbage time situations. Or
I mean, he threw 28 passes in the first 3 weeks of the season. He went 23 of 28 on them, including a 10 of 10 games. So wow. He was pretty effective as a passer when he got that opportunity. But the
you know, Jake Haner had a good game too.
True. The appearances he's made since
those,
the first
most
3 weeks
of those were against Oregon State. Anyway, go ahead.
The appearances he's made since the first 3 weeks of the season, he has not thrown a pass, and he has run 4 times for 7 yards. So we'll see if that's something they unveil.
He's coming in the game to run the ball.
Yes. Even though you still got the threat. It's unlike when Gaskin is running the Wildcat, and you know he's not going to throw because he's, by the way, what a great time to set that up.
Oh, my God.
The final game of Miles Gaskin's career. Finally let him throw.
All the things that we thought that Coach Pete was setting up for all these years, he never was actually setting up. It's just the offense.
True.
There are no trick plays coming.
Did you see the...
They're all quick punts.
Did you happen to see...
The fake quick punt is going to happen, though, at some point.
Someday. Did you happen to see the Q&A with Bush Hamden today as part of the Rose Bowl media availability?
No.
And like there was like a series of questions about trick plays, as if that's a thing that the Huskies do.
For Bush Hamden. What was his response to all of them? We're just going to go out there and play our game, stuff like that.
No, he answered them honestly. I mean, just like literally that one game against Oklahoma is what everyone thinks of with Chris Peterson all these years later.
kind of amazing.
They did have one wide receiver pass against in the Apple Cup, and it did result in a touchdown. So
because they always do.
They got that going for them, which is nice. Ohio State as great as they are offensively, not a great rushing attack. They're averaging 4.4 yards per carry this season, the same as UW. Have a two-headed running back attack with J.K. Dobbins, who averaged 7.1 yards per carry last year as a freshman, but is down to 4.6 this year as the starter. He gets slightly more carries than Mike Weber, who is averaging 5.5 yards per carry. And it's also a really balanced receiving core with four wide receivers over 600 yards.
The sorting hat sent him to House Slytherin.
I vaguely get that reference. Paris Campbell.
It's a very Harry Potter name, J.K. Dobbins.
Yeah, okay, I get that. Paris Campbell is the leader of that receiving core with 79 catches for 992 yards and 11 touchdowns. Terry McLaurin, a senior, is their big play threat. He also has 11 touchdowns on just 34 catches, averaging 19.7 yards per catch, which ranks 15th in FBS. That is the highest touchdown rate per catch of any receiver with at least 30 catches, wow, according to sportsreference.com.
So basically what you're telling me about Ohio State's offense is they're not a great rushing attack.
I mean, they're decent.
And they pass the ball exceptionally well.
Yes.
They are one of the best passing attacks in the country.
Yes.
And they're going to be facing, and again, we talk about kind of recency bias, and the Huskies secondary for a lot of the season looked good, but didn't necessarily look like they looked against Gardner Minshew and then again in the Pac-12 championship game.
Yes.
They played this defense and the secondary in particular.
Can we name who the Utah quarterback was in that game? Tyler Huntley was the guy who got injured, right?
Great question.
Man.
Troy Williams, I'm sure. it's Alex Smith for a couple of snaps. They played this DBU secondary, played some of their best games of the year at the very end of the season.
Jason Shelley,
oh man. And if they can play at that same level, this feels like a game that is set up kind of perfectly for the Huskies' strengths.
Yeah, except that, so what I thought was an interesting comparison for this game, UW, pretty similar on paper to Michigan. Like, Michigan was slightly better across the board this year. Like, they're both teams that play very pro-style offenses and pro-style defenses, which makes sense with Jim Harbaugh. UW was 18th in offense. Michigan was 12th. UW was 15th in defense.
I cannot believe that Michigan's offense was better than UW's.
They were very good over the course of the year. Michigan was 7th, and Ohio State torched Michigan, actually mostly through on the ground, where they averaged over 6 yards per carry in that game. Very atypical for the Buckeyes. The one interesting thing, though, in looking at that comparison is there's a huge difference between these two teams in terms of two of the best nation's best pass defenses. Michigan allows opponents to complete 49% of their passes, which is the second lowest in FBS,
okay,
but for 11.2 yards per catch. UW, as we've talked about at length, allows opponents to complete 64% of the passes, which is 14th highest among all FBS teams, but for 8.9 yards per completion, which is far and away the lowest among all FBS teams. No one else is below 9.5 yards per completion.
It's a really fascinating thing that they do. So they're willing to give up some space.
Yes.
And they're willing to give you completions, but they're sure tacklers, A.
Yep.
And they're not letting people get behind them.
So I don't know if that means that Ohio State will just, like, if you put the guy who completes 70% of his passes against the defense that allows 64% completions, does that mean he completes like 80% of his passes? Which is not great. That might have been what happened last year with Trace McSorley.
For some reason, I have it in my head that Trace McSorley is like the best quarterback UW ever faced.
Well,
amount of credit that I give to Trace McSorley for Penn State's success last season is unbelievable. And I look at Dwayne Haskins, who was invited to the Heisman Trophy ceremony, and I'm like, he's average.
Yeah, he was much better than McSorley this season. The other interesting thing, though, is if Haskins does decide to test the Huskies secondary, the best quarterback to date.
When he's the Cardinals quarterback next year, week 17.
it's actually, I think they're going to stick with Josh Rosen. That would be interesting. The best quarterback they have faced so far this season is Stanford's, in terms of QBR, is Stanford's KJ Costello, not Justin Herbert, not Gardner Minshew.
I mean, we know who's actually good.
But they picked off Costello multiple times in that game because he was actually willing to throw downfield.
He played pretty well, though.
You need to have a lot of completions in the second half.
By the end of that game, if you told me that the closest comparison, it's another one of those quarterbacks where I'm like, KJ Costello is the real good quarterback in the Pac-12, and Gardner Minshew and Justin Herbert are frauds. If you're telling me Dwayne Haskins is more KJ Costello than he is Gardner Minshew or Justin Herbert,
oh, 100%.
Watch out.
I mean, Gardner Minshew also completed over 70% of his passes, but like the yards per completion, it's not even in the same neighborhood between
the two.
There's
just nothing.
So,
wow, this is a fascinating game. But so you're telling me that Michigan was, where was that in Michigan?
No, that was
that was at the Horseshoe.
It was in Columbus.
Michigan was better on offense than the Huskies.
I mean, it's weird because of the fact that Ohio State and Michigan under Jim Harbaugh have had like the same relationship as UW and Wazoo in the Coach Pete Mike Leach era, except like collectively way better. But the same thing where Michigan can't beat Ohio State no matter how good they are the rest of the season.
I love it. But so Michigan is a better team on both offense and defense.
Yes.
And Ohio State destroyed them.
They did. But that, again, that's
it's a one-off game, though. Like, Maryland is much worse or whatever.
Exactly.
Purdue is probably much worse than the Huskies are. It's just like you're taking this one game because they're a team that looks similar, but it's one fucking game. Like,
but I think
let's all just be cool here.
I think that's what's driving a lot of the Ohio State hype, is that one game, which was a great game.
The amount of games that people... Here are the amount of times that people watched Ohio State play this year. Just general average sports fan. It was the loss against Purdue, where they badly lost, and when they crushed Michigan. So the way that you would think about Ohio State is, wow, they're really down, or, man, this team is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just like, to me, taking their best performance of the year, it's the same with the UW secondary. Like, are they going to play as well against Dwayne Haskins as they did against Jason Shelley and Gardner Minshew? Of course not, right? They're not going to have that kind of game. The Huskies are going to give up points in this game. But can they make the ratios make a little bit more sense?
Yes. All right, the other side of the football is where the Huskies are going to have to make up some ground. Ohio State, well, we're talking about yards per completion, 13.2 yards per completion, which ranks 102nd in FBS. They've given up a lot of big plays. They also allow 4.6 yards per carry on the ground, which ranks them below average, 87th among the 120 or so FBS teams. So, you know what this is going to have to be?
What?
This is going to have to be a good offense game.
Oh, my God. I'm so scared of when they have to break out. The Seahawks, I want them to break out the good offense. When the Huskies break out the good offense, it's terrifying.
The Huskies are going to have to run the ball successfully.
Oh, God.
And then hit some big plays in play action.
Oh, God. Wait, I don't think that's the good offense.
That's a good offense.
That's Brian Schottenheimer's good offense. The good offense for the Seahawks is they
throwing on early downs.
Yes.
But that's often with play action, and it becomes more likely if they run the ball successfully.
It's still, despite, I don't want to be part of the Jake Lash. If they have to have a game where they have to rely on Jake, it still makes me nervous.
But I'm saying they don't have to rely on Jake.
Okay, that's great.
They're
going to
run the ball well.
That's what I want to hear.
That's the point. Although, I want to give a take here.
All right, let's hear it.
Jake Browning is not the reason that the Huskies have struggled in high-profile games.
Oh, really?
Which, of course, are the last two bowl games, Auburn in the college football playoff, or Auburn, Alabama in the college football playoff, Penn State last year in the Fiesta Bowl, and then Auburn at the start of this season. Like, look, Jake was terrible against Alabama. He was also injured, and it was Alabama, and the Huskies never had a chance in that game. But last year against Penn State, he averaged almost 8 yards per completion. He was fine. He wasn't the reason the Huskies lost that game.
I remember so little about that game.
Same here. Granted, a lot of that probably happened in the second half. And then against Auburn, and granted, his receivers had a lot to do with it. The Huskies threw for 9.3 yards per attempt, way more than Auburn.
It's more, and turnovers are going to be a huge factor in this. It's some of the notable turnovers.
Let's wait for that.
We're waiting?
Let's wait for that.
Oh, man. But, okay, we'll come back to that.
But I just don't think there's, like, everyone wants to tie together those three losses because they're the most important games that the Huskies have played in the Coach Pete era.
What about the Cal loss? And what about the Oregon loss?
First off,
let's start talking about some other losses.
First off, let's talk about how many fewer Jake Browning interceptions there were than all of the TCU quarterbacks combined.
It's like you're positive or whatever. It's just like, let's look at more losses here.
Oh, okay.
those weren't the only losses. There were more.
So the other reason this feels a little like a Seahawks offense game
is
that the thing that Ohio State...
It is the best offense for the Huskies.
The thing that the Ohio State does best defensively, even without Nick Bosa, who will probably possibly be the number one pick in this year's draft, but is out for the season after core muscle surgery and then decided to just prepare for the 2019 NFL draft after three games. Ohio State still number 21 in sack rate, a category in which the Huskies, by the way, rank 113th in the country.
That's why I thought you were saying that we'd have to get the good offense, which is Jake dropping back a lot more often, and that is not what I want to see.
In situations where you can keep the defense off balance.
Running, play action, misdirection with Savon.
Yes, which is not something we've ever seen in a like one of these marquee games is the Huskies successfully using
Jake
Savon.
Jake Browning out there as a lead blocker.
9.5 sacks for defensive end Chase Young, who stepped up in Bosa's absence, and 8.5 by defensive tackle Dremont Jones. So that's a little disconcerting. So I think you're right that the turnover battle is the place we need to talk about. There's four games this year where Ohio State lost the turnover battle. In those games, they have a collective point differential of zero. They scored exactly as many points as they gave up because of that 29-point loss to Purdue. In the other games, they have a plus 25.6 point differential. So I know which side of that one I want to be on. Now, here's the bad news.
Oh, no.
Is that Ohio State both commits fewer turnovers and forces more turnovers than the Huskies. We're shockingly good for a team that does not do very well in the turnover battle.
It just has to be a game where the running backs are solid, no fumbles, nothing like that. Receivers, yards after catch, and Jake can't do anything stupid. It's just
that,
like...
doesn't happen that much. It just...
But it happens in such like high-profile situations. And what we don't want is we don't want Jake thinking to himself, this is my last ever game as a Husky. I'm going to go out on top. Like, this is the moment. This might be professional football. This might be the last football game that Jake Browning plays anywhere near this level ever again. He's not going to be an NFL quarterback. He may be in a camp next year.
Yeah, I just don't think that's his personality. That's not who Jake is.
We sure as hell hope not. Because we don't need any sort of, we don't need Jake, I feel like a broadcaster or whatever. Don't need Jake playing hero ball, right? Just like staying in his element, doing everything that he can do, throw the ball away if he needs to. But when Jake really starts trying to make big plays, that's when it feels like bad things happen.
I think the Apple Cup is the ideal here, where he went like 15 of 20 for 220 yards.
Yeah.
And that was amazing.
Let's just get a solid Russell Wilson game out of Jake, right? Run, play action, run on third and short if they have to.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, I think this is a chance, a game that the Huskies have every opportunity to win. I don't think that they're certainly not the favorites. Ohio State is the favorite. And, you know, counting on winning the turnover battle again over a team that's done that over the course of the year when you haven't is probably not a reasonable thing to expect to happen. But it's a thing that certainly is within the realm of possibility.
I mean, I really think it's going to come down to, in the end, like you mentioned, turnovers and UW's secondary in particular. If UW's secondary can make plays, maybe a pick six that leads to a touchdown, or something. Well, a pick six would obviously lead to a touchdown.
It would, yes.
But like a big play from somebody like Byron Murphy, Taylor Rapp coming up with something. And if they could somehow, Ohio State's going to be watching for it because they're thinking the same thing that everybody else is thinking. They're not thinking this is a team that doesn't run trick plays because they don't. They're going to be watching out for him. But if the Huskies can hit a couple of big plays in whatever way that it happens, maybe it's a bomb from Jake with a broken tackle, maybe it's a wide receiver pass, something like that, they can get something like that, some of these big plays to turn the game around quickly, and then rely on their defense, I think this could look good for them.
I think Hunter Bryant has got to come through with a big play.
Oh my God.
Because think about it, Hunter Bryant has had as much time to practice since the end of the season is he had basically leading up to when he made his debut. He should be substantially more closer to 100% now than he was when we last saw him in the Pac-12 championship game.
So the thing that you're not talking about here, though.
Same with Trey Adams, by the way.
Is special teams.
Oh, do we have to?
And unfortunately, this is almost certainly going to be a closer game than 6.5 points. And this game easily could come down to a drive where the Huskies are down 3,
oh,
down 2, driving with the ball and have to rely on either scoring a touchdown quick or kicking a field goal.
Is Timothy Horn yet eligible yet?
And they're going to have to be relying on Peyton Henry there and Ohio State, who has a much better special teams all around.
I mean, I think it can be a good thing in terms of, as we saw in the Pac-12 championship game, if the Huskies are forced to repeatedly go for it on fourth down between the 30 and the 40.
Let's see some Jake scrambles.
Because
let's see some sneaks.
Like, they're backing their way into the right thing to do. Like, yes. That might not be the worst thing.
Yes.
Especially in a game like this where you're not going to win this game with field goals. You're going to win this game with touchdowns. You have to anticipate that Ohio State is going to score points.
Oh, man. The thing that this reminds me of most, though, is looking at these teams, is one of those Rams games that the Seahawks played this year. And the Huskies are a better defense than the Seahawks are by far. It's not even close.
They're not a good, terrible defense. They're just a good defense.
They're just a good defense. But I think it's going to come down to one of those situations where either A, they need to get a stop to try to get the ball back with a chance to score and win, or B, they have the ball and they're coming down and need to try to score late.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I think there's probably a better chance of Ohio State winning this game because of just those slight differences in these two teams, where Ohio State's explosiveness is a little bit better, their special teams are significantly better. I don't know if we can necessarily count on the Huskies being a good enough offense to necessarily keep up with them the entire game. They can hang in there, and I think there's a 55% chance of Ohio State winning.
Is that how we do it now? That the chance of the opponent
45% chance of the Huskies winning.
In classic Peldon Cast fashion, I'm going to say precisely 5% lower. I think it's a 40% chance. It's not quite a coin flip. It's not, you know, not even terms, but it's definitely a game that the Huskies can realistically win and would be their biggest win. I know we talked about their biggest game. This would be unequivocally their biggest win since at least the 2001 Rose Bowl, and possibly even back before that, when you consider the fact that, with all due respect to Drew Brees, who is amazing, and Purdue, like, they're not Ohio State.
Okay. Look, Drew Brees is no Dwayne Haskins here.
Dwayne Haskins is going to win like two or three MVPs. Drew Brees might win one. Depending on what Patrick Mahomes does this Sunday.
Has he not won an MVP before?
He has not won an MVP.
Wow, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Peyton Manning and Tom Brady won a lot of them, it turns out.
That's the other game, though, where you looked at a team in Super Bowl 48. The Seahawks gave up a lot of completions. Not necessarily in that game, but that defense was willing to give up completions and willing to give them up short. And we thought that the Broncos going into that game were the exact type of team that could pick that defense apart. But the Seahawks ended up getting a big lead because of turnovers or whatever. Special teams plays.
Snaps
overheads. Got a lead, and then it was over from that point forward. Could that be this Husky defense against Ohio State?
I hope so.
No way.
Okay, no. Good. I mean, they won the game 48-3. Like, that's... What did they win? 43-8. I'm reversing it. That's not happening. The Huskies win this game by 5 touchdowns. I just don't even know what we would do.
I'm just excited to watch it, though.
I'm excited to be there.
Yeah, that's the other thing that makes me nervous, is you being in attendance.
Shouldn't me being in attendance shouldn't be make you nervous?
Yeah,
the fact that Third Pelton Brothers, Nate Taggart, and Tyler, and their whole crew are going to be
Nate,
in attendance.
Tyler, Alicia, Lexi, Randy crew is just like, them being in the house makes me nervous.
And it's not a great track record, including the loss at Cal earlier this year.
Oh, God.
But, you know, streaks are meant to be broken. On that note.
We hope that the next time we're talking to you, we're talking about the Rose Bowl champ, Washington Huskies. Go Dogs.
And a happy new year to you, the listener, because we will not be recording any more podcasts in 2018.
That
already
you know
recorded
of.
Way too
that
many.
You know of.
I mean, what would happen between now and then? There's not going to be a Cardinals recap pod. Sorry.
There might be a literal emergency pod right now.
Yeah. Can't get through the lines. All right. On that note, thanks for listening.
Thanks.